Hey everybody, welcome to the first. Great to have you here. It's February 9th, 2024. I'm Ryan Ballingy. We haven't had a show the last couple of days, and that's in part because this is the first week with our new puppy. Her name is Penny. She's very cute, but she also requires a lot of attention. So, been a little bit of an adjustment period this week, but we'll pick up a little bit better starting next week. But I wanted to recap some things over the last couple of days that are definitely worth talking about here in a show, and lead you into the weekend with all of that. So before we get into that, we are presented by our friends at Swannies. Check them out, swannies.co. Use the promo code GOLFNEWSNET25 and save 25% off your first order. We're getting into spring. It's coming, and lots of great spring stuff is now available on Swannies' website, swannies.co. So check it out for yourself and save 25%. All right, bunch of things to get into. And a fair amount of it is live-related, I suppose. Some of it is just kind of weird, scary stuff that's going on with Liv and the people who are helping the Saudis, and at least what they're claiming. And then I also kind of want to get into just some thoughts on the last day or so of tournament action that I saw. Let's start there. Yesterday, Phoenix Open, first round, had a 3-hour weather delay. It seems to happen once a year in this tournament where there's a significant weather delay. Occasionally, it's because there's hail or ice or that type of thing, because the desert actually gets cold at night, turns out. And it holds in heat during the day, but then it loses it all at night. And that's not always the case, but certainly can happen. And so it leaves the area susceptible to temperatures. But they're really getting the back half or a continuation of the atmospheric river that hit Southern California this week. So they had a lot of puddled water. I mean, there was a lot of rain yesterday. They had hail yesterday, or 2 days ago, rather, during the Pro-Am day. They wound up canceling the Pro-Am. It was a bit of a mess and kind of continued through on Thursday. Didn't finish the first round, and They will finish it today, and they'll try to get through the second round. They probably won't today. Then they'll make a cut, most likely Saturday morning, leading into the craziest day for golf attendance of the year, which is Super Bowl Saturday, Phoenix Open Saturday. It's wild. And that's going to be kind of funny, because a lot of people are going to roll in when the gates open. I think they open like 7 a.m. local. And there are going to be thousands upon thousands of people watching dudes just try to finish golf. Like, they're just trying to finish it up and see if they can make the cut, or they might WD, but I doubt that. They're going to try to get to the weekend. This is a big tournament for a lot of players in this field, because they haven't had a lot of opportunities to play. And for them, it's going to be weird to have people just chugging down beers while trying to make the cut. And very early in the morning at that. So, that'll be funny. So there's that yesterday. He had Sahith Theegala playing really well. He did wind up finishing his round. Played great. But there's still a lot of guys that have to finish today their first round, and then they'll kick into the second round. So, they still have not resumed play. It will resume at 10:30 a.m. Eastern Time, 8:30 Mountain Time. They're 2 hours behind. So, there is a lot of golf still to be played. At least all of the field is now out on the golf course. The morning wave is done, so there's that part of it at least. But there's the second half of the field. A lot of players still have basically their entire round to play. So they'll have to push tee times around, and they'll get it all figured out, sorted out. It's fine. But a weird start weather. Like, once again, weird weather week for this tournament. And we talked about it leading into it, but that's an unfortunate situation for the PGA Tour, but they can't control that, right? Then, yesterday was the lowest round ever recorded on a major professional golf tour. 50 freaking 7 on the Corn Ferry Tour. Cristobal del Solar from Chile shot that number in the first round of the Astara Golf Championship at the Country Club de Bogota in Colombia. And he shot 13 under 57. Let that sink in for a minute. Now, if you were going to try and poke a hole in this, as I'm trying to get to the leaderboard because the second round's in progress, if you took that in just unto itself. You go, that's unbelievable. It's the craziest round you ever heard of. And you should still have that opinion, right? But the golf course that they played on yesterday, not the Lagos course, or the FC, the Lagos course is what they're playing today, Del Solar and his playing partners. But they played the Pacos course yesterday. That course is very tight, but it's only like 6,250 yards. Basically the white tees at my country club, but much tighter. And if you've ever played golf down in that part of South America or Central America, you know that what a tight golf course looks like. I mean, what comes to mind for me is this place called Cariari Country Club when I played in Costa Rica, probably about 16, 17 years ago. And just overhanging trees everywhere, relatively small fairways, I mean, very narrow fairways, the kind of Bermuda where the ball gets right to the bottom and it's hard to pick it out. So, yes, it's short. Don't get me wrong. It's short. But if you look at the overall challenge there, it's not an easy golf course. He was five better than anyone else yesterday. Right? So even the guys he played with, Chris Ventura, who's been on the PGA Tour, he shot 62. The other guy in his group, Trevor Cohn, shot 63. So combined, they shot 28 under par. Had they played a best ball, they would have shot 54. I mean, those guys played an incredible round yesterday together, but Del Solar shooting 57 is absolutely crazy. No bogeys, as you would imagine. He got to 13 under, I think with five holes to play or four holes to play. So if you look at his scorecard for round one, yeah, he got to 13 under after 15. He opened two birdies the first three, pars four. The next five holes, four birdies in a row and an eagle to shoot 27 going out. Birdie, par, eagle on the 12th. Shorter par five. It's the only par five on the back. And then number nine was a par four. It was 330 yards. So must have driven it and chipped, you know, either chipped it in or made the putt. And then they are playing at elevation too, right? This Bogota is at elevation. So it's a little bit shorter. But again, tight golf course. And then birdies on 14, 15, you start to think, well, 56, 55's in play. Ryan Gibson has the lowest ever recorded round that I've ever heard of with 55. I think he shot in Oklahoma, and I don't remember how long ago it was, but 55's the number. And he had a legitimate chance to shoot 55, which is freaking frightening. It's unbelievable. I don't care if this golf course is short. It's a par 70. They could have made it a par 69. It doesn't matter. He shot 57. If you shoot 57 for 18 holes on a regulation golf course, you have done something incredible. So congratulations to him on that. As we're recording this, he has started his second round. He is one under through one. So he's playing on the other golf course that's part of this tournament. That golf course is closer to 7,250 yards, par 71. So who knows what's going to happen for him today. There has never been a player in the history of professional golf to shoot back-to-back sub-60 rounds. So if that somehow happens, we got something crazy going on, even crazier going on today. But this round eclipses the lowest round ever shot in a major professional tour. There's only one sub-60 score in the history of the DP World Tour and the LPGA Tour. I think there are two on the Champions. And then you have a bunch on other tours, like the Challenge Tour and the Canadian Tour and they've never had one of the Legends Tour or the LET. That hasn't happened yet. PGA Tour has a whole bunch of them, most of them. Liv's got a couple. But there were three last year, three 59s last year on the Korn Ferry Tour. Never been a 57, the lowest round on any tour that I've ever seen, a major tour, is 58 until yesterday. Jim Furyk did it in the final round of the 2016 Travelers Championship in Connecticut. Exactly one week after, Steven Yeager did it in a Korn Ferry Tour event at a place called TPC Stone Brae in California, which I don't think is a TPC course anymore. So that kind of back-to-back 58s 8 years ago, almost 8 years ago, that is a very interesting kind of trend where you kind of get these in bunches, and you had three last year in the Korn Ferry, but never a 57. And they've been playing this event in Colombia for quite a while. So that has happened is still amazing. Pretty amazing stuff. And then we'll bring in Liv, and then we'll transition to the kind of couple things related to Liv we'll talk about. Liv had their first round in Las Vegas. They're playing Thursday through Saturday. I gotta be honest with you, there was like no one there. I mean, truly no one there. And I did watch some of it. It is part of my job. I did watch some of it on the stream. They didn't have more than 20, 21,000 people watching on YouTube, which they had about that number, I think, for the most part of Jon Rahm's debut last week. So, similar audience. And that's probably to be expected. And the in-person didn't look very good. The event they were trying to copy is Phoenix, right? The Phoenix Open. They wanted to have a party hole, you know, a par three like they do with 16 at Scottsdale. And there was like no one there. I mean, it was not good. And I guess they didn't paper it. They could have. By paper it, I mean hand out free tickets and get people to come that way, or pay people to come. Could have done that. But they did not do that. Not a lot of attendance. So I think Paul Casey is tied for the lead after the first day, which is kind of surprising because he doesn't win in the United States. Doesn't win frequently, but he definitely doesn't win in the United States very often, except in Tampa. And we'll see what happens there, I guess, the rest of the way. Harold Varner III played well. Maybe he's kind of a party guy. Maybe he's excited about being in Vegas for the week. I don't know. It was kind of strange to me in the press conferences leading into the tournament. We'll talk about two things. One, first we'll talk about the Ironheads team, because Kevin Na and Danny Lee were interviewed by Jane McNeil, who's the press person for Liv. And maybe there were other media there, but Jane asks a lot of the questions. And they were asking about recommendations for people who are coming into Las Vegas, whether that, you know, for whatever reason, presumably the Super Bowl, because that's on Sunday. And Kevin Na is kind of just going through the motions, and you can read it in how he talks in the news conferences. He's like, well, you know, Danny, you got any recommendations? And he's talking to Danny Lee, who's on his team. And Danny Lee goes, strip clubs? Danny Lee later goes on and talks about why he moved from Dallas to Las Vegas a couple years ago, pre-move to Liv, and he's really enjoyed it. And then just kind of ends the comment by just saying strip clubs. Like, he's apparently obsessed with strip clubs, which I think is very weird to acknowledge publicly. Like, hey, you do you. You do what you got to do in life. But just kind of put that out there publicly in a press conference seems very strange to me. And then the, like, Clark County commissioner, I forget what Tick's last name is, but he handed, like, the keys to the strip to Kevin Na for some reason. All right, sure, whatever. Na's a native of the area, like, he lives in the area. And just to kind of talk about that was strange. And then he was asked about, by Jane McNeil, about the format change for the team thing, where now it's instead of two rounds counting the first two rounds in the top and then three rounds counting in the final rounds, now three rounds count for the first two and four rounds count all four in the last two. Asked about the format change, and he was like, I don't like it. I wish it were the other way, because my team's not stacked. All the stacked teams have an advantage by counting four rounds. Counting three would give us a better chance. And Jane asks about whether he shared that opinion, and basically Kevin Na said, no one cares what I think around here. And that's an interesting kind of peel back of the curtain a little bit about where Liv is. I think there's kind of this presumption that, and a lot of players are just, they're happy with, you know, I'm happy I'm here, team component's great, blah, 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 and the talking points are good. But it's starting to kind of break down a little bit, where I feel like some players are starting to be a little bit more public about their discontent. And I think Kevin Na is one of those guys where he's like, you know, no one listens to me. My input doesn't matter on the forming of a league. They're going to cater to the stars, just like, by the way, they did on the PGA Tour. And that his opinion doesn't particularly matter. So they've made it more difficult for him and his team to win that team money, which they have 13 teams now, and only three get money every week, yet they're supposed to somehow fund themselves or something. I don't know how that works exactly, especially given that there are no really other revenue streams for them. And I thought that was interesting that he just kind of talked about that in the open. And then I want to point you to Jon Rahm's news conference, which was the day prior. His team is Legion 13, and they're all up there, and Rahm's asked about the tournament that he's missing this week on the PGA Tour, that he can't play in, and not being able to play at Torrey, because he's won a U.S. Open there. He won a PGA Tour event there in very dramatic fashion with a 70-foot eagle putt. And then not being able to defend two titles he won last year because he's ineligible to play on the PGA Tour at the Century and the American Express. And his comments, I think, were... I think a good look at what he might have dealt with in thinking about signing with LIV and now realizing it, what has happened. And I'm going to pull up the story from golfnewsnet.com. I should have had this just sitting there. But he talks about missing these events, the ones, a couple in particular. He doesn't talk about the Century really missing it, but he does talk about the others. And he says, quote, "It was a lot harder to be at home." He lives in the Phoenix area, "not competing and knowing that those events were going on. Palm Springs, which is the American Express, and Torrey, those weeks were hard. I've explained so many times how important Torrey is for me." Again, winning a U.S. Open and one of his first, maybe his first win there. "And driving by Phoenix as often," meaning TPC Scottsdale, "as often as I had to, and knowing that I wasn't going to play there, it's definitely emotional. That's one of the things I'm going to miss. I'm hoping that in the near future, I can be back playing some of those events. I would certainly love to go back and play some of them," end quote. And I think that's a little window into what Rahm was thinking when he signed with LIV. One, it was to the point with the money that he probably felt he couldn't say no. And at the same time, he was hoping and assuming that the PGA Tour, DP World Tour, and the Public Investment Fund of Saudi Arabia would come to a deal quickly, and that all this stuff would get wrapped up, and that within, you know, 12 or 18 months, they would be back kind of playing under the same umbrella, whatever that looked like, and he would be able to go and play some of these events. He'd miss it for a year, maybe two, but come back. Now, I'm not so sure that that's happening. There is an increased vocal set of players, increasingly vocal set of players, that are star players on the PGA Tour that are effectively saying, we do not want LIV players to come back without a penalty. They can't come back scot-free, despite what Rory McIlroy wants. And he appears to be an outlier here, not part of a larger contingent. He seems to be an outlier at this point. And I don't think McIlroy's feeling is completely misplaced. He wants unity. He is kind of a peacemaker guy. He wants people to come back together. That's just kind of his personality type. But other star players like, hey, look, man, you took the money. You sued our tour, some of you. You dissed us. You walked away from what we've created to create this chaos. You shouldn't just be welcomed back with open arms. And that hasn't been an increasing view. Players have also been increasingly public in their thought that maybe there doesn't need to be a deal with the Public Investment Fund, and that the money they have from Strategic Sports Group and money they could still raise from other resources that could effectively just keep the Saudis out of it. And I think there's going to be a realization for some guys like this, primarily the Rahms of the world, that they're not going to be able to easily come back to the PGA Tour. Even if this deal gets done, there's regulatory approval. There's things to work out about welcoming players back in from LIV. How often they play on the PGA Tour. Does LIV still exist? Joel Beal did a very nice piece on this for Golf Digest to kind of summarize some of the things that are definitely issues out there. And one of the biggest ones is this. How do you achieve unity other than money How do you welcome players back to the PGA Tour that want to play and have eligibility to play on the PGA Tour? Does LIV continue to exist? The PGA Tour does not want it to exist. The PIF does. The PIF also wants LIV golf players to be able to play on the PGA Tour. So that's probably a non-starter, but at the same time, Beal posits that that is a low priority item because, not because it's not important, but because it's hard to solve. There are two sides butting heads, and they don't have reason to agree. So that's one of those things kind of standing out there where you go, all right, well, if you come to an agreement on the money, then you've got to figure out the rest. And that's, this part is a big stumbling block where you've got players who say, and Kevin Na talked about this too, that he misses the opportunity to play in the Shriners Children Open because it's his local event and friends and family miss being able to come out and see him. And I'm sure some of them wound up at Las Vegas Country Club yesterday, but it's a different feel. And said, you know, this is good. He's trying to put a nice spin on it, that this is good, but I would like to play that again someday. So it feels like there's an increasing talking point from their players. Man, I'd love to be able to play back on the PGA Tour sometimes. Not all the time, but sometimes. And if you really thought about it, I think, or you talk to a lot of players, you would realize that most of the events on the PGA Tour, they don't necessarily have an emotional connection to each player. You know, Rom likes Torrey because he won there first, because he won his first major there. Phoenix, because that's where he's from now, that's where he met his wife, that's where he went to school. I know it's not in Phoenix, but anyhow. And then, you know, Nas got Las Vegas. Different players have different events that they just love. Tiger with, obviously, the event he hosts with Bay Hill. I mean, there's, you know, there's all kinds of these kind of pet events that players connect with either because they've been successful there or they love them because they live there. It's their hometown event kind of deal. But not every event has that. And not every event has that with every player. And that, I think that's worth acknowledging, right? Not that they're throwaway events. That's not the case. That's not what I'm saying. But they connect with players in different ways. Sometimes it is truly about the money, getting the points, whether that's FedEx Cup or LIV in this case or world ranking points in the PGA Tour's case. You know, sometimes it's just that. It's not an emotional connection. So when these players are talking about trying to play some events that they miss and then fit in the ones where they have, you know, no cut 54 players, free money, guaranteed $50,000 for showing up and playing DFL golf, that they're cool with that, but they want to play some of the ones they want to play. And for other players, they just want to play the majors, right? They want to be able to have guaranteed access to the majors, or at least have a chance to get in the majors if they're not a major winner, and then they can go play whatever else, they don't care. Good example is Cam Smith. So we've talked about Rahm and Na saying they miss certain events. Cam Smith doesn't miss the PGA Tour. It doesn't sound like it. He doesn't have an emotional connection to those things. He likes not having to play a lot of golf. He truly seems like a guy who doesn't want to play a ton of golf. He's said he's getting better on LIV. I don't think that's the case, but I mean, you can see it in his results. But he can also go home in the quote unquote off season and go play the two Australian important events, the Aussie PGA and the Aussie Open. I mean, he could do that anyway. He could have done that before. It just, he feels like he can go back and spend a lot of time there. And by the way, he could now if he played the PGA Tour, because he would almost certainly be in the top 30 or 50 and getting all the signature events, and he wouldn't have any problem. He wouldn't have to play any fall events. That wouldn't come up for him. So, but he's not thinking about that. He's thinking about his day-to-day. Dustin Johnson's doing the same thing. Dustin Johnson doesn't give a crap. He's got his money. He won his two majors. He's good to go. If nothing ever happens again where he hoists the trophy, that he is totally fine. He's just doing it to do it. Is not universal of every LIV player they want to come back to the PGA Tour or even play a single PGA Tour event. But some have already expressed, hey, we would like to go play at least some PGA Tour events. But again, welcoming them back, what does that look like? That's a big stumbling block. The other thing I want to point out, well, two things I want to point out, is a story from ESPN, and I've seen this other places, so it's not just an ESPN thing, but Bloomberg News, I think, was the first to report this. A U.S. Senate committee that's investigating this merger, you know, the PGA Tour LIV merger, that had the different hearings. They have been told by Saudi public investment fund bankers and consultants that they face, quote, criminal and financial penalties, end quote, if they cooperate with the investigation. Michael Klein, who's a banker, and representatives from consulting firms McKinsey, Boston Consulting Group, and Teneo Strategy have all said they cannot cooperate, and here's why. Quote from Boston Consulting Group's Rich Lesser in prepared testimony. Quote, the PIF has been explicit that the disclosure of information relating to BCG's work for PIF is a violation of Saudi law, and they've said this in Saudi court, which imposes criminal penalties for disclosing or disseminating such information, including imprisonment for a maximum of 20 years. We risk criminal and financial penalties for the firm and for individuals working or living in Saudi Arabia. And that could include those 20-year prison sentences for executives and staff working in Saudi Arabia. So they could all be imprisoned basically immediately if they talk. Klein said, this represents aberrant behavior for a client, and quite frankly for the PIF, who has historically been a client that has operated with the best practices of governance with us. And then Richard Blumenthal, who's in this hearing, he's the senator from Democratic senator from Connecticut. He's the co-chair, I want to say, with Ron Johnson from Wisconsin. But he says in this hearing, quote, it's simply staggering to me that American companies are not only willing to accept this claim, allowing the Saudi government to determine what is permitted to provide this subcommittee, but also that they would use it to justify their refusal to comply with a duly issued congressional subpoena, end quote. And there was a statement made to Bloomberg by the PIF that says, in part, they are, quote, making significant efforts to facilitate the production of requested information from our advisors consistent with the laws of Saudi Arabia, which should be recognized like those of any other country, end quote. So, again, this is who you're dealing with. This is what you're dealing with. And the sovereignty stuff aside, whatever that is aside, if you're the PGA Tour and you see something like that in a Senate hearing, you go, if we partner with them, we absorb that PR. For better or for worse, we absorb that PR. And you kind of absorb that anyway by coming together in this framework agreement. But you're not stuck. But this is something you would absorb, right? So, very strange and very concerning. And then one other thing I want to point out, and this is from a podcast a couple of days ago, and I'm sorry, we're kind of putting together three shows into one here, but I do want to get through this real quick. Carlos Ortiz was on the Golf.com podcast Subpar with Colt Nost and... gosh, I forget who his co-host is. I'm sorry. I forget at the moment. But anyway, Carlos Ortiz is on their podcast with Nost, and he was saying that he was told by LIV prior to signing that they should expect world golf ranking points. And effectively, they were either deceived or lied to. Ortiz says, quote, I think it's both. They definitely said that we were going to get them world ranking points. We haven't got them. But I just feel that people have to recognize that there's good players here. If you're going to have a world ranking that includes all the best players, you have to have some people included in that world ranking. Parenthetical, no, they don't. I understand that we went out of the system, and it's going to take time to be part of the system. But I also think that if the world ranking was to be accurate, they have to include all kinds of players. And I'm not saying we should have got them from the beginning or something. I know there were certain rules, and I knew from the beginning the consequences and the setback that we could have, and I accept them. I just wish we could change them and find a way we could be part of that ecosystem where we could be ranked and compete freely, not only in majors against the other players. I just think there's a way. There's definitely enough proof that we have a legitimate tour where there's good players and we should get rankings. Because at the end of the day, why we're not getting our world ranking is you need to prove certain years or certain time that you have a legitimate tour. I think it's already proven that we have a legitimate tour. That's my opinion. I definitely knew the consequences. And the reason for going, not getting world ranking points, was part of them. And sort of true, but, and that's fine that Ortiz says he knew, but that he was promised it and they didn't get it. And that's consistent with text messages to Sergio Garcia and other stuff like that. Not saying that that is news. But I do think it is interesting that players are now talking about it more publicly. That, again, we were told this. We would like to come back and do these events. The, you know, they equally want some version of peace. Whether that's they play on live and they get points. Whether that's they play on live and they play other events sometimes. Whatever it is. But it doesn't sound like a lot of live players are out there going, no, we want to stay completely separate. Leave us alone. We don't need your points. Whatever. For the guys who have access to all the majors, they're totally fine with it. They don't need points. They don't care about their world ranking. They care about getting the majors and playing the free money live events. They're totally fine with that. But if you're a player like Carlos Ortiz, who had at one time access to the majors because of his world ranking, and now you don't and you can't for the foreseeable future because you have a league format that, not because it's 54 holes, they can accommodate that, but because there's a team component, that part makes it more difficult. And I still think you could set up world ranking points. And at this point, I really don't think it would matter. But they knew going in, and that's what the money was for. You were getting paid off for the risks you were taking. Losing access to majors, losing world ranking points, losing access to PGA Tour events, stuff like that. That's the risk you took on. So that's what you got paid for. Much larger sum than you probably would expect. And if they don't have, the other part of it was that, the team format, but the other part was being able to be promoted and relegated and having different fields from week to week. If you have the same qualifying criteria for the whole season, which is the same field every week, then whatever. We don't want you. You can't have the same field. We've been over this and we won't go over it longer, but the world ranking works only because there are different tours with different fields, different quality every week. If it's the same every week, it reinforces itself in a weird way, and that can have unforeseen impacts that was not built for that. So they have to figure out, they basically have to change the formula pretty dramatically to accommodate for that, or how they would have to come up with a special carve out for Liv to accommodate that, the same field over and over and over again. Actually, I think it would work against Liv. So it's better for them to have this as a foil from a PR perspective. But then again, people don't seem to be listening or particularly caring about what's going on with Liv in reality, in the real world. So for us golf geeks, diehards, people who are following this kind of stuff, yeah, it's interesting, it matters. But in the grand scheme, this is happening with no one paying attention. And that makes all of the money being floated around here even weirder, to be honest with you. All right, that's going to do it for us today and for the week on 2 at the First. Thanks for listening. I appreciate it. Sorry again for not doing shows the last couple days. We'll have a bunch of shows, Monday through Friday next week. Lots of exciting things to talk about. New friends coming on as sponsors. We're going to talk about that as well. And hopefully you'll support them just as much as you've supported Swannies. They've been great, and looking forward to another year with them as well. If you want to get a hold of me, ryan@thegolfnewsnet.com, Twitter, X, Threads, Instagram, and Blue Sky at Ryan Ballingy. I'm on YouTube, Facebook at Ryan Ballingy Golf. Thanks so much for your listening to the show, supporting the show. It's great. It's very much appreciated. Sorry for the longer one today to catch you up on everything. And we will talk to you on Monday. Have a great weekend, everybody.